Welcome back. This is Michael Thiemann, and I'm the host of today's OpenSource.com Open Your World Forum. And thank you for joining us. I'd like to remind folks that we have a number of people standing by to pick up comments and questions and incorporate your participation into this discussion, so we want to encourage that. But now I would like to introduce our next speaker. Matt Jaden is the Assistant Professor of Computer Science at Allegheny College, and he's going to be presenting today his experiences of working with open source software, and in particular, teaching open source software to the next generation. Thank you. Go ahead, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Michael. And I just wanted to say thank you very much to Red Hat for hosting this and for letting me take part. This is certainly a lot of fun. I titled my presentation "The Challenges and Rewards of Diving In," because I think that that nicely captures my experience this past year of, not that I'm new to open source in general, but certainly in terms of bringing students fully into the experience of contributing to open source communities. That's something that was quite new to me. And so that's what this talk is going to, that's what it's going to dance around, is my experiences and the experiences of my colleagues who I collaborated with in introducing students to the Fedora project, specifically through the agency of the marketing and design teams. I think that's my title slide. I'm not at my laptop, and I know I only have three slides, so I think I can say next slide. And so I'm going to talk through just a few points. I want to provide a bit of context. That's going to be some institutional context, so you understand where we're coming from at Allegheny College. I want to talk a bit about the kinds of scaffolding that we needed to provide to our students as we went through this exercise, and then also talk a little bit about the kinds of evaluation that took place around this project, some of which is still, of course, ongoing, and then talk a little bit about next steps. And I don't know how questions work during this process. I assume that there are not interruption questions, so I'm going to target 30 minutes and leave time for discussion at the end. So I'll start with institutional context. Allegheny College is a small liberal arts college. We have about 2,000 students. I don't know the exact number, but that's round numbers correct. And these are students who, I want to say about half of our student population comes from the greater Pennsylvania, Ohio area, and the other half come from really anywhere in the world, certainly all over the U.S., but we have a reasonable international student population as well. And when we say it's a small liberal arts college, I never know what kinds of educational experiences people have had. What it means is that the kinds of things that students study are many of the traditional liberal arts topics: literature, history, religion, philosophy, the natural sciences, physics, biology, chemistry. And in some ways, Allegheny it's not unique as a small liberal arts college, but not a lot of them necessarily have computer science departments. So that's a nice addition, we think, because it provides an opportunity for students to bring computing into their experiences educationally, potentially crossing it over with fairly diverse fields. And that's another point that I wanted to make. That's actually one of Allegheny's branding elements, which is the notion of unique combinations. And part of that is because of the mandatory minor that is outside of the field, the student's major field of study. So if a student is a computer science major, they must take something from a minor and something from the humanities or the social sciences. And vice versa, a student who is majoring in literature is expected to do a minor in perhaps the natural or social sciences. So that's this notion of working across boundaries is baked into the institution's DNA. And that, I think, was part of what helped make it easier to make the transition into introducing students into the world of open source. Now, for me to get into this, I was really excited to take part in Red Hat's POSSE, I think is a marvelous acronym, and that's That stands for Professors Open Source Summer Experience, Software Experience, Mercy. It's been almost a year, and the mind goes quickly. And so a number of us were brought to the Secret Red Hat Lair. They created an entire campus in Raleigh, North Carolina to make us think. Actually, I think that that was to make us think that's where Red Hat is. I'm sure they have secret headquarters somewhere else. And we got to work with some excellent people and learn a lot about what is involved in introducing students into open source projects as contributors, not just, hey, this is Firefox. Why don't you consider using that to browse the web? But, hey, even if you're a first-year student in computing, you can get involved in these projects. And there was a fairly computing-centric focus to POSSE, and as I came back to my own institutional context, I realized that I had some really neat places where we could bring students into projects that had almost nothing to do with computing. And that's not an obvious thing when you say, well, how do I get students involved in the Fedora project, which is clearly about this huge ecosystem surrounding Linux? So it was in October that I was sitting with a colleague of mine in the art department, Darren Miller, and he is also acknowledged in the slides. He and I did all of the work that I'll be talking about together this past year. And we said, you know, we have to, next semester, lead a freshman seminar, and why don't we do something together? We were sitting in a presentation that was part of Allegheny's theme year. They have a theme year every year, and this year was the year of social change. And this was fairly auspicious, given the kinds of ideals that surround open source in general and, of course, the Fedora project with the four Fs. So we looked at what we were going to be doing next term and said, you know, October, it's a bit tight, but we have time to do some redesign. And so what we did is we put forward a proposal for two freshman seminars, which is a third part of the institutional context. These are a required part of our first-year curriculum, where students take one course each semester, which is very much about being introduced to writing at the college level, speaking and presenting, how to take part productively in discussion, and a little bit of a general intro to thinking across the disciplines in the liberal arts. So what we did is we put together two course proposals. One was for a course titled Art and Activism, and that would be led by Darren. And the other was Technology and Activism, which I would lead. And our thought was that these courses would come together every several weeks, and the students would each be pursuing themes surrounding the notion of activism, social change, and, in my case, technology, in Darren's case, art. And our goals was to get them writing and speaking about these topics, but we also wanted very much for this course to have a hands-on feel. We wanted the students to have the opportunity to learn by doing. We thought that was important. And it comes very much from, of course, our background. Darren is a practicing artist, and a lot of the work that I like to do in my spare time is very applied and hands-on. So one of the projects that we had our students do was the Cardboarduino. If you are familiar with the Arduino, the Cardboarduino was a design I put together where they built an Arduino on a sheet of cardboard using hot glue and bits of wire and a bit of soldering. And so it was a really nice opportunity to blend the craft of computing with craft of technology with art. And you can probably Google for Cardboarduino. Good luck on spelling that if you'd like to know more. The other, though, is we wanted to get the students involved in the Fedora project. And that, in part, was because of the excellent context that we had made. I had made the summer previous through the POSSE. And so what we did is we then began talking with specifically Melchua, who's the Fedora marketing lead, and who I've known for several years. And we started kicking ideas around saying, okay, how can we get students into the Fedora project? And really, the important thing to hear to remember is that we're talking in, I want to say, November, December, about a course that starts in January. And we're talking about involving first-year undergraduates who have no idea what they want. Well, some of them might, but who have not yet declared majors, who are still relatively new to the college experience, who haven't yet even necessarily cemented what how they themselves learn and do best in the classroom. And so as we put this together, we were realizing that we really couldn't make any assumptions about what our students were necessarily capable of. But what we did know is we wanted to give them the opportunity to dive in and to do. That alone, and I hope that I touch on that correctly here in the scaffolding section, was actually something that I think we needed to scaffold better. And I'll come back to that. So in terms of scaffolding an experience like this, how do you take 40 first-year undergraduates and get them involved in the Fedora Project in a 14-week time frame? This might almost carry a negative connotation, which it shouldn't, but it was almost like a clown car experience, you know, where the car pulls up and a whole bunch of people get out and they do a bunch of crazy stuff and they all get back in and drive away. That's kind of what it felt like, because we had a 5-week window set aside towards the end of the semester where this would take place. And wow, pushing 40 people into a community, throwing them in, saying, just get your hands dirty and do something, was pretty exciting. So to scaffold this kind of project, we needed to design in advance. And so we spent a lot of time in the end of the fall and over the winter break. You know, when people talk about college professors only working a few hours a week and having long summer breaks, that's all a lie. So over break, as they call it, we put in a lot of design time. And then the week prior to the start of the Fedora Project, which happened to be spring break, another one of those quote-unquote breaks, we were very fortunate that Mel was actually able to join us for about 2.5 weeks. And so we hosted her and spent a good bit of time then actually putting the meat on the bones of this project. This worked wonderfully. Unfortunately, we don't have the cloning technology to create more MELs. So this is not a scalable solution, but for a first-time bootstrap, I think it was certainly a necessary step and something that we were very happy was able to happen. And so we figured out a lot of the details of then what was going to be involved. Now, in hindsight, if I were to have scaffolded this differently, I would have introduced students much earlier to the fundamental communication technologies. For example, we did not introduce them to IRC until we dove into the project. Was this a big mistake? No. But it turns out that really any students, but first-year students, already have a lot going on by the time they get to the end of their first year. And so then you say, now we're going to throw you into a project that is completely different than anything you've done in your educational experience, of a scale much larger than you are accustomed to working on. We're going to ask you to use a whole bunch of technologies that you are not familiar with. You yourself might actually be quite computer phobic. And so, by the way, now everything you do must be mediated by some kind of electronic communication. That's pretty exciting. Whereby exciting, we mean students coming up to us in a panic after class saying, I don't know how to do this. Am I going to be able to pass? And while that might sound trite, I don't mean it to. I think it's reasonable for students to want to do well. They're investing, sometimes they and their families are investing a huge amount of money in their education. And so it isn't just what do I have to do to get an A, but what do I have to do to learn what I need to learn from this work, but also then for my record to show that I have done it well, so as I move forward, people look at my transcript or at my resume and say, this was something that I did it well, and you should consider me for an internship or a job or whatever. So in terms of scaffolding, we threw a lot at them right after spring break, which is exactly when the academic year really picks up. So just as they were coming into midterms and all kinds of other things, we said, let's do something new. We were very fortunate that the Fedora team was able to put together a live CD image that was still at DVD size at that point. But what we didn't anticipate, and I should have thought of this, was, of course, you know, the kids come to school with brand new laptops. The Fedora Live CD didn't boot on all of them. I said, that's fine. We will use computer science. And we installed VirtualBox on a bunch of their machines. Now, have I yet done my good community service, my good open source community work and filed tickets on the various things that didn't work? I will admit to you I did not, because I was busy fighting fires. VirtualBox didn't even run Fedora on all of their machines because I don't know what was going on with their machines. I had a marvelous situation with two students with identical laptops where one would boot the CD and the other wouldn't. I can't tell you why. And so this is the kind of thing that you now have to multiply by 40 students. And so both Darren and I and Mel were working very hard to get the students fully into the technology. For future thought, future projects, it's clear that what we need to do is, if we're going to do something like this towards the end of the semester, the entire semester must be spent with a thread running through it where students are introduced to the technology. And another critical part of space, making sure you have good workspaces. We did pretty well with that, thanks to some flexibility on the part of my colleagues. And assignment design. And this is where we now get into some of the challenges of crossing students into open source projects. We are dealing with two very different communities. Not that they're antagonistic or incompatible, but if I take my class, it has a finite duration. It is 14 weeks long. During that 14 weeks, I'm expected, certainly by my students and by my institution, to have a fairly clear schedule on hand. My students really like to know what the big picture is, so they want to see a syllabus that says what's going to happen over the 14 weeks. And they like a pretty detailed picture on a 2 to 3 week window. So that means that they don't want to be surprised any given week with a big course change, like, oh, we're going this way now, not something they're excited about. So part of that is having assignment designs done in advance so the students can plan their own work schedules and say, well, if they expect me to write a 5-page paper by such and such time, I also have to do my bio lab, and I've got this group that I'm part of, and I'm going to be going here for spring break, and so on and so forth. So it's just basic respect that we provide some kind of scaffolding, and that we provide clear assignment designs. Now, this is exciting because when you walk into an open community that is approaching the end of a release cycle, you know, they're really operating in a different mode. And not only that, but to a certain extent, the open community has a basic currency, its contributions. And if you show up and say, what should I do? Someone will say, why don't you do something? They might be more specific, but the idea is, well, we're not going to tell you what to do. First-year students certainly have an expectation that, as a professor, you will tell them what to do. They don't come into the classroom and say, what should we do? And then you turn around and say, you should learn. And they go, why, that's a great idea. I'll come back in 14 weeks, having mastered some material, and tell you all about it. If that was the way it worked everywhere all the time, we wouldn't need schools. So the open community expects that you come in with your enthusiasm and energy, are willing to dive in, are willing to be, as I believe the phrase is, productively lost. And if at first you don't succeed, you will try again. It isn't that I have any disagreements with this philosophy, but I only have 14 weeks. And in the case of this project, only 5. Productively lost is essential to good hands-on learning, but I need to compress it, and I like to have outcomes. Certainly my students expect that there will be something that they can point at and say, ah, I see what I learned. I'm not claiming this is the way it should be. I'm claiming that there are expectations in both communities that must be accounted for. We do have to consider the realities of how the open community works and how the educational community works when we do this crossover. And it's not, like I said, that they're incompatible, but I needed to come, you know, and we did this, is we broke out of various track tickets of known projects that were ongoing or targeted for release in the marketing and design teams, 10 specific project ideas that the students could pursue. And I think this was a little bit challenging on both sides because, of course, from the open community's point of view, it was odd to break those projects out in that way. And likewise, though, from the students' point of view, they felt the projects were still too vague. So we had a schedule, a big picture view, a three-week window, rubrics. We then needed to come up with ways that we would evaluate the students based on the success of their projects. And so for some students, they were working on strategies for using Twitter and Identica to promote the Fedora project. Other students were trying to engage in questions surrounding a debate of how to use video most productively. Yet other students dove into some of the track tickets, I believe, on the design teams, in the design team's track instance, and you know, we had some very successful work come out of that. Yet other teams, other students working on interviews with developers, other students working on one-page release notes, a wide range of things. And in the end, we had to come up with ways to say, well, we will expect you to write reflective documents of this nature. We will be looking for this kind of meta-thinking, this kind of reflection on learning, and we're going to be evaluating on you on the quality of your writing. We also had some presentations that we asked them to do, and again, evaluated them on that. And so I think what I'm trying to say is that we did not evaluate them on the quality of the work they did for the project because it was so disparate. And so many things that they were doing that it would be difficult to be anything but arbitrary and capricious in some ways. In the future, I might be able to do better, but for now, that was what we were able to achieve in our first dive, I guess, into this kind of work. So we needed rubrics. We needed to be able to tell students what it meant to do this well, and we also had to communicate values and outcomes, which was hard. Because if I were to jump all the way to the end, some really nice conversations with students after our release, quote-unquote release party, which was basically our last day of class, with students saying, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into when I started this, but in hindsight, I see that with all the communication and all the writing we were doing, this was highly valuable. Because when I graduate from Allegheny, I won't be writing papers about things that I've read, necessarily. But I certainly will be communicating with people via email, on mailing lists, through chat, and all kinds of other things on a daily basis. And this was incredibly valuable in that way. We also had other students who were just amazed at their own experience of diving into the technologies. But I'm getting ahead of myself because that's the fun stuff. So I think what I've tried to convey in the last 10 minutes is that a lot of work must go into scaffolding the student's experience. And this is going to be the subject of further discussion and debriefing on our part at Allegheny in conjunction with members of the marketing and design teams to better understand what did we do well, what can we improve, what should we avoid doing in the future, and getting that kind of information documented and up on wikis and in other spaces where others can then learn from our experience. My semester ended on the 12th, and I've been traveling ever since then, and happen to be calling in from sunny Los Alamos. So point being is this is something we haven't even had time to do since the semester ended, but something we're very much looking forward to. Now, evaluation is complex. As I often reflect about my teaching evaluations, our teaching evaluations are critical at Allegheny College, as is the case with many small colleges. It perhaps is the most important dimension of our evaluation as faculty. And so we had two dimensions here. We had to evaluate the students, which I've already talked about some, but then we were then evaluated by them. The students, I think, had mixed reactions to being thrown into a large open-source project. Coming to grips with the idea that there are people from all around the world who are contributing freely and not necessarily with central control. Mel had recommended to me the book, The Starfish and the Spider, and I'll actually be requiring that in one of my classes next term. Because, of course, this is something that it's very easy to take for granted, this notion of a community-driven process. If you are deep within it, sometimes it's perhaps easy to forget that certainly for a first-year undergraduate, they've just come out of, you know, 12 years of education or more where they're told exactly what to do, and if you do this, 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 and this, you'll get an A. So this is at the far end of their experience educationally. So we got a fair bit of pushback regarding how this was structured, how they were evaluated, how clear they felt things were. And also setting up the relevance. We worked hard to do that, but at the same time, it was the first time we had engaged our students fully in this way, both for myself and for Darren. So how do you communicate those meta goals that the students were able to articulate at the end, at the very start? Right. Not that it sounds like a hustle, but to say to the students, it is the experience of doing this that will lead to very difficult to articulate learning outcomes for you. It will provide you with an opportunity to work in an authentic context where maturation, communication, collaboration, all of these things will happen. And they're not things that we can necessarily put boxes on paper and tick off and say, oh, good, you learned that. That kind of meta-reflection, meta-learning, while I think essential to any good education, that's a challenge to articulate on day one. You know, students are still trying to figure out what kind of person you are and what is this class going to be about. And jumping to that altitude in terms of learning outcomes at the end of a semester can be a cultural shift, and that's part of what then makes the end evaluation challenging. In our view, we were very excited. I hope I don't sound negative about this experience at all. Darren and I both think that it was absolutely marvelous. We acknowledge that there are things that we can improve about this kind of work in the classroom, but I think that we presented our students with an excellent community to work with some excellent outcomes that we can actually look out and point at and say, wow, you did that. I'd say that, you know, and I could get in trouble with putting numbers on this. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to reserve the right to revise them by 20% up or down, which means that they'll all be meaningless. I'd say that at least 30% of the class, a third of the 40 students who are working on this project, did some really just excellent work, just first class, considering that we just dumped them in. And that doesn't necessarily correlate with ABC student in any way, shape, or form. The project provided an opportunity for many kinds of students to excel in many ways. That is certainly a marvelous aspect of this kind of work. I'd say that fully 60% of the class did good work. Whether or not it necessarily produced tangible outcomes for the community in all cases, it certainly, the students did engage and did good work. And I'd say maybe around 10% or so just didn't engage fully. But here's the marvelous thing about these numbers. I could teach anything I wanted, doing anything, and, you know, numbers like that, plus or minus 20, are what I'd get, right? Any class I teach, I'm going to have some students who excel, a large number of students who are good, and some students who don't engage very well. That's just about a given in any educational context. And in all of this, though, and I've said it before, the community support was essential. I've mentioned Mel, and I don't know the community as well as I would like. In the future, as I look to thinking about this kind of thing, I know I want to spend substantial time in advance scaffolding my own way into the community so I know more people well. And I think there was just a lot of blind trust going on. And in terms of, so a lot of, I just looked at the clock. I'm going to try and wrap up in about the next 2 or 3 minutes. But there are a lot of marvelous people. Mo Duffy on design, Robin, I will butcher her name, Bergeron, in marketing, and many other members of the IRC community and the mailing lists responded wonderfully to the students. We had told them, well, when you go into this space, you might need asbestos underwear. There will be people who will jump on you about things. But because the community was aware that we were bringing 40 new people in a big rush, and perhaps just because it's an excellent community, and perhaps many communities are this way, and I've just had some negative experiences in my own time, the students at no point felt threatened or worried and actually did an excellent job, I thought. And likewise, the community support was essential for the success of what we did. Now, in terms of faculty, this is a twist on evaluation. And I'm going to wrap here, but it remains in my mind one of the big challenges. It's clear to me, I think, that there are rewards for introducing students into these kind of communities. It prepares them in excellent ways for a lifetime of learning. It gives them a context in which they can dive in and do and be confused. And then there aren't many downsides to being confused. The community expects it and embraces it. That's magical. Just like the iPad. That really is a marvelous, marvelous thing, to have a community of people who expect you to be lost and to be glad that you are. So the problem, though, is that from a faculty perspective, that we aren't evaluated in sort of the six-month ongoing cycle. I get evaluated on three very clear rubrics: quality of my teaching, quality of my research, and my service to the institution. If I take a bunch of 18, 19-year-olds, throw them into a project like this, they think, you know, we think it should have been more organized. And the teaching evals aren't so good. I do not yet know what the teaching evaluations look like for this class. But the point is that at that point, if the evaluations are low, it doesn't matter how marvelous the experience was for the students 5 or 10 years later, that they come back to reunions and say, that was wonderful. If my teaching evaluations suffer as a part of this kind of experience, that costs me, and it costs me in a real way. So the uncertainty of these kind of projects, the challenges of aligning student expectations with the community, and in terms of research, my metric is publications. Now, at a small liberal arts college, it is often more broad in terms of scholarly activity. But at the end of the day, if I can turn this kind of thing into publications that are peer-reviewed, that is my metric. And it's not yet clear how best to extract that kind of value for myself so that I get to keep my job and continue doing this kind of work. And it's a huge time investment. And I think that if we were to identify a critical challenge going forward for the open source and educational communities, you know, if we want to talk about the ask, that there's a cost that I think falls heavily on the professor and currently in this model. And especially if you are a junior member of the faculty. So one solution to this is to identify more better ways of working with senior members of the faculty to engage their students. These are people who have security. Then the kinds of evaluations you undergo after your first 7 years, that is once you've achieved tenure, are different. But before then, what you are doing is demonstrating to the institution that after 6 years, you should keep your job. So either we need to target more senior faculty in these kind of projects while we are doing the development and the risk-taking, or we need to find ways to reward this effort. We need to find better ways for the student outcomes to be tangible to the institution. We need to find ways to produce clearly understandable outcomes, that is probably publications, and or funding. That is, if we can find more ways to collaborate across these spaces to generate grant funding and other things to support this kind of project, because institutions understand money. And they say, wow, you got a $5,000 grant. That's wonderful. Hey, you applied to the NSF and got $100,000. That's wonderful. And so those are all tangible outputs from the institution's point of view. Red Hat has to be lauded for their work in this space. I think that it would be a marvelous thing to see more members of the open community joining in and supporting this kind of outreach on the part of faculty. And I think that's where I will close. It was an excellent experience. I think we learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to working with the marketing design communities of the Fedora Project to document this better so that everyone can actually see more of what we did and perhaps be able to learn from and build on our experiences. And I will wrap there for questions and/or conversation.
Matt, thank you very much. We've actually got a few questions coming in from online, and I've got a few questions myself. And so let's start with the online questions from Spain. William Fernando asks how students in specific areas can get involved in specific tasks using open source software. Did you see any of that task specialization going on in your classroom?
We did see some. We had one or two students who were planning on computing degrees, and they, perhaps by choice or perhaps by accident, but did gravitate towards interviews with developers. We had another student who was very nervous at the start, who was unsure how, with her more art-focused background, she would be able to take part. The technology looked overwhelming. And she actually closed a ticket on a Fedora logo for Fedora Africa. I'm sorry if I forget. But she said, well, I have an understanding of software for doing digital art, and I think I can learn the GIMP. And so she actually produced something that closed a ticket. So we did see some sort of interest seeking, some specialization by discipline. And I think that was very profitable and might be a good thing to scaffold in more explicitly in the future.
Great. Another question from one of my colleagues at Red Hat, Jason Hibbets, wonders how many of the students are still involved in their community efforts after completing the class. Do you know that information?
I suspect it's low because we were lucky to wrap by the end of the semester. That's something that I would do differently. I would work at perhaps putting this in the middle of a semester experience, so that way there was a way to perhaps transition out of the meat of the project itself and perhaps provide better ways for the students to remain involved. We wrapped on the last day. If the students are remaining involved at the exact moment, I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
But we also hit the end of a release cycle, and so I suspect for the students they saw a lot of closure around them.
Yeah. Well, let me make a comment and also ask a question. So I love that description of being productively lost. I remember that throughout my educational career, as I came up, my relationship with the school library, as I went from smaller to larger school, there would be times when I would kind of feel the call of the library as a way of becoming productively lost and seeing things that I knew I would not have otherwise discovered. And now we all have Google, and yet having an opportunity to get a survey of what is available in open source, I think, is a great way to fire up the imagination.
Yeah.
But the question I want to ask you is, so I officially have a liberal arts education, although my degree is a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science and Engineering, but I went to a liberal arts school called the University of Pennsylvania. And it took me many years to finally gestate the understanding of what critical thinking is really all about. And I must say that I cannot imagine doing critical thinking in the 21st century if I were limited exclusively to classical era qualitative analysis, the 1850s version of liberal arts education. I would expect that if there are numbers, people should know them, and if there are numbers, people should be able to analyze them, and if there are other scopes and scales of things that inform things quantitatively, that an essential part of critical thinking in this day and age is going to be mediated by computers. Is this something you're considering in your construction of this class in a liberal arts context?
It's a good question. I think the answer is yes. The freshman seminar program is very much currently structured around writing and speaking. And we expanded this to notions of, I'll say, technical literacy. That is, involving the students in these projects. Getting fully into numeracy and analysis of data, even in the small, can be challenging. And I think it becomes a question of what can you do in 14 weeks? And especially what can you do in 14 weeks with 20 students who chose your class based on its title, because they had to choose one of 40. There's about 40 possible seminars they can take. They don't really know who you are. They don't know what the course is really going to be about. What they know is it's probably not, well, they really don't know. It's topical. But they know it's kind of going to be about writing and speaking. So in the freshman seminar, I think getting into quantitative work would be challenging. But I agree with you completely that I have done work in a human-centered context quite a bit that blends qualitative and quantitative methods, and you can't rely on just one. The mixed methods matter a great deal for critical analysis of the kinds of things that we deal with today.
Yeah. I'm
essentially dodging your question. The freshman seminar, I think it would be challenging to do.
let me help you, because I think, I mean, the fact that you're teaching this is super important, and it is the beginning, I think, of a new synthesis. And so I'm greatly encouraged that Allegheny is going to give you another chance to do it again. And let me just give you two examples of where I think quantitative analysis, right, meaning critical thinking, is a proper concept in a liberal arts space. A year after the incredible tsunami that happened in Southeast Asia that killed so many people and inundated so much land, some graduate students asked the question, this is at the University of Genoa, which has a documented history of numerous tsunamis over the millennia, but generally tsunamis every 70 to 140 years. So not the kind of thing that you can learn about from your parents, but something you sort of hear about in lore and you deal with. Yep. Anyway, they were able to use geographical survey data, vegetation information, hydraulic analysis, and a whole bunch of other stuff to actually map out what was the risk of a 1.5 meter, a 1.5 meter, and a 2.5 meter tsunami wave hitting the beach, and actually accurately graph what the proper protection zones were. And it just so happens that in their part of the world, the maximum inundation range was something like 100 meters. So there was no great need for the Italian government to go and prepare for a 30-kilometer inundation like occurred somewhere else. But what's fascinating to me about these geographic information systems is that more and more people are aware that they are living in the world, which actually operates under a whole bunch of interdisciplinary forces, whether it's land use or water use or topography, et cetera, et cetera. And having the tools and the competence and the confidence to be able to actually look at the world, see the world through multiple lenses, and make a reasonable determination about what are real risks. People talk about the difference between a FEMA floodplain and God's floodplain, the latter being the actual result of a natural disaster. And to me, the people who find themselves in a, you know, outside of a FEMA floodplain and then confronted with disaster as climate change is upon us, those are the people who probably wish that they had a more numerate education and wish that they had available to them skills in the tools and data, which are now freely available.
Yes, I think I would say that what's fortunate is Allegheny is part of their most recent strategic plan, which is just starting. We have a new president, and the last 10-year plan has closed. And interdisciplinary and cross-disciplinary work and learning has taken a critical role in that plan. So I'm excited to see that that's the case. And I don't disagree with anything you've said. Mm-hmm. And so specific implementation questions in a first-year seminar, you know, we can sit down and work through that over coffee. But I think what's important is that the institution has committed to, over the coming 10 years, to making that a focus and encouraging the kind of collaboration that Darren and I engaged in across computing and art and saying, this is valuable.
Yeah.
And I think that's acknowledging explicitly exactly what you're saying, that we can no longer be the armchair anthropologist or sociologist. We must be number aware. We must be able to use many sources and draw on many disciplines to make informed decisions. So
and the thing which is so amazing, I mean, there are a lot of things that we're not quite yet doing right in government, but the world teaches American data because we actually are liberal with our data. And so, you know, between USGS and Census and NASA, with the National Institutes of Health and the Department of Energy, you know, it is phenomenal the extent to which somebody has the ability to conceive of a question to ask, whether it's related to social sciences or natural sciences or what have you, and then actually put together a system and sort of understand it.
Yep.
Okay. So I want to thank you so much for your participation and for your ongoing support of open source. And now I would like to introduce our next speaker.